A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
So Daniel sent us this one, and it's basically a love letter to a hardware store in Talbiot. He's been doing a ton of DIY lately. Apartment move, economic necessity, the whole thing. And he walked into a place called Om Vaboreg, which literally means screw and nut, and had that moment. You know the one. After weeks of AliExpress shipping delays, big chain stores charging double US prices with staff who don't know a lag bolt from a lug nut, you walk into a shop that has everything, fair prices, and a guy behind the counter who actually understands your project. Daniel's question is, how do we systematize finding and sharing these diamonds in the rough? Israel's defamation laws make negative reviews legally dicey, so the smart move is building whitelists, curated lists of the good ones, and sharing them through what Israelis call Fergan, that cultural practice of generous, sincere praise. He wants to know how to do this systematically.
And I love that he names the store. Om Vaboreg just puts it right out there. That's the whole philosophy in one move. Don't waste time complaining about the bad ones, just elevate the good ones. And the thing is, he's describing an experience that every Israeli DIYer knows in their bones. You spend 3 weeks waiting for a package from AliExpress that may or may not match the listing photo. You drive to Ace and find the exact same toggle bolt you saw on Home Depot's website for 11 shekels is 27 shekels here, and the guy in the orange apron shrugs when you ask about shear strength. Then you stumble into some industrial zone tambour, and the owner's been selling fasteners for 30 years, and can tell you which anchor to use in Jerusalem limestone just by looking at a photo on your phone.
The emotional whiplash is real. Daniel said he felt like composing a love song. I've been there. You walk out of one of these places almost giddy, holding exactly the right M6 bolt, and you want to grab strangers on the street and tell them about it.
So let's unpack what's actually going on with hardware shopping in Israel. Because the problem isn't just about finding a drill bit. You've got this trifecta of options, and every single one has a structural flaw. AliExpress gives you essentially infinite inventory. If it exists in a factory in Shenzhen, you can order it. But standard shipping is 2 to 4 weeks. Quality is wildly variable. And if you need something this weekend to finish mounting your shelves, it's useless.
And the big chains.
Ace and Home Center. And this is the one that really bothers me because the branding promises an international experience. You see the familiar logo, you walk in expecting the Home Depot or Lowe's experience, and what you get is roughly double the US retail price for identical products. I've done the direct comparisons, same SKUs, same packaging, sold by staff who often have no project level knowledge. And then they try to upsell you on a loyalty card that's actually a credit card, which we've talked about.
Nothing says we understand your project, like a hard credit pull at the hardware store register.
Right? And then you've got the local tambours, the neighborhood shops. Some are fantastic. The owner's been there since 1972 and can diagnose your plumbing problem over the phone. Others are basically a room full of dusty boxes where the guy behind the counter is watching a football match and doesn't know what a drywall anchor is. The variance is enormous.
So the consumer's job becomes pattern recognition. You're not shopping, you're prospecting. Every trip to a new store is a bet, and most of them lose. But when one wins, when you find the Om Vaboreg of your neighborhood, it feels like striking gold. And that's what Daniel's getting at. The current tools for sharing those discoveries are terrible.
Let me explain why. Google Maps reviews in Israel are a mess. You've got fake reviews, you've got one-star tantrums because someone had a bad parking experience that has nothing to do with the store, and you've got five-star reviews that say things like good prices or nice guy with zero context. A five-star review for friendly staff and a five-star review for stocking specialty fasteners are completely different signals, but they look identical in the rating system. None of it tells you whether this store has the specific anchor you need for mounting a TV on a hollow block wall.
Facebook groups are ephemeral, Someone posts, "Hey, anyone know a good hardware store in Givatayim?" And 3 people respond, and then that thread is buried forever. WhatsApp chains are even worse. They're invisible to anyone not in the right group, and good luck searching a WhatsApp chat from 6 months ago for that one store someone mentioned.
And none of these solve what I'd call the "I forgot that great place in Talpiot" problem. You discover a fantastic store, you're thrilled, you tell yourself you'll remember it, and 2 years later when you need a specialty bolt, you can't recall the name or the street. You just remember it was somewhere in the industrial zone and the guy had a mustache. That's a personal knowledge management failure, not just a discovery problem.
Daniel's own behavior is actually the proto-system here. He said he saves stores to Google Maps, and then tells everyone he knows about them, whether they want the information or not. That's the impulse. The question is how to formalize it.
And before we get into the mechanics, we need to talk about why a praise-only system makes strategic sense in Israel specifically. The defamation law here, Chok Ishur Lashon Hara, applies to both written and spoken statements. False negative statements about a business can carry criminal liability. Now, the common misconception is that you can't say anything negative at all. That's not quite right. Honest negative reviews based on genuine experience are generally protected. The problem is the chilling effect. Even if you're in the right legally, defending yourself costs time and money and stress. Most people just don't bother. So the practical outcome is that negative reviewing carries risk, and the ecosystem of honest, critical feedback is underdeveloped.
Whereas positive recommendations carry zero legal risk. You can't be sued for saying someone's store is wonderful. And this maps perfectly onto the cultural practice of furgon, this Hebrew concept that doesn't have a direct English equivalent. It's not just praise or complimenting someone. It's the act of generously and sincerely celebrating someone else's success or good fortune without jealousy, without reservation. It's a value. Israelis already understand furgon as a social good. So building a consumer whitelist isn't just a workaround for defamation law. It's operationalizing a cultural value that people already hold.
And that's the conceptual glue for this whole episode. We're not building a system to avoid lawsuits. We're building a system to do something Israelis already want to do, share genuine praise for the people who deserve it.
So let's get into the mechanics. If you want to build a systematic whitelist, what are your options? And I want to compare these on 4 dimensions: durability, shareability, searchability, and maintenance cost.
Option 1 is the simplest, a curated Google Maps saved list. You can create custom lists, add up to 150 places per list, make them public, or share them via link. They're searchable within Google Maps, and you can make them collaborative, share editing access with friends. The friction is almost zero. You find a store, you tap save, you add it to your Jerusalem hardware. The good ones list, done. 30 seconds.
The downside?
Google could deprecate the feature tomorrow. They've killed products before. Google Reader, anyone? Your data lives on Google servers, and if they change how save lists work or remove the feature entirely, your whitelist disappears. That's the durability trade-off. Low effort now, but you're renting the platform, not owning the data.
Option 2. A simple GitHub Pages site with a markdown file per store. Version controlled, portable, zero hosting cost, lasts effectively forever. You own the data. If GitHub disappears, you've got the raw markdown files on your computer, and you can host them anywhere.
But the setup requires technical knowledge. You need to know what a Git repository is, how to write markdown, how to configure GitHub Pages. For Daniel, who's an open source developer, this is trivial. For the average DIYer who just wants to remember where the good bolt store is, it's a barrier.
Option 3. A shared Apple Notes or Google Keep folder with structured entries. Lowest friction of all. You can dictate an entry into your phone while walking out of the store. But discoverability is terrible. There's no search across entries in a useful way. No map integration. And sharing with more than a handful of people gets messy fast.
So the trade-off is basically, Google Maps gives you discoverability and map integration with almost no setup, but you don't own the data. GitHub Pages gives you permanence and portability, but requires technical comfort. Shared Notes give you zero friction, but limited utility for anyone beyond a couple of close friends.
I think the sweet spot for most people is start with Google Maps, and migrate later if you outgrow it. The important thing isn't the platform, it's the structure of each entry. What fields do you actually capture?
This is where most people's lists fall apart. They save a pin with no context, and 6 months later they're staring at a map dot labeled hardware store with no memory of why they saved it. Daniel's Om Vaborg experience gives us the template. A structured entry needs exactly four fields. 1. What they're best at. Not hardware store. That's useless. Fasteners and specialty bolts, carries metric and imperial thread pitches, stocks the Fisher anchors that nobody else has. 2. Price level relative to alternatives. About 30% cheaper than Ace for the same items. 3. A specific staff member who helped you. Ask for Yossi. He knows thread pitches and can recommend the right anchor for your wall type. 4. The date of your last visit. Because a store that was great in 2023 might have changed ownership or declined, and you need to know if your information is stale.
That fourth field is crucial, and nobody includes it. A whitelist without timestamps is a nostalgia project, not a tool. You're curating memories, not maintaining a consumer resource.
And this connects to something I want to dig into, the psychology of Fergan as a consumer behavior. When you share praise, it feels different than sharing criticism. Criticism carries a social cost. You might be seen as negative, as a complainer, as someone who's hard to please. Praise carries a social benefit. You're the person who found the good thing. You're generous, you're helpful, you're in the know. So there's a built-in positive reinforcement loop. Every time you add a store to your whitelist and share it, you get a little social credit. That loop keeps the list alive.
Whereas a negative review platform has the opposite dynamic. You're exposing yourself to legal risk, social friction, and the emotional labor of reliving a bad experience. No wonder Google Maps reviews are mostly fake 5-star ratings and 1-star tantrums. The incentives are completely misaligned.
So we've established that existing platforms fail us. But what happens when you build your own system? This is where it gets interesting.
The first thing that happens is your whitelist becomes social capital. You become the person who maintains the Jerusalem DIY map. People in your social network start coming to you. Hey, I'm mounting shelves in a concrete wall in Baca. Where should I go? And you have the answer. That positive reinforcement loop gets stronger. You're motivated to keep the list updated because being the resource feels good and is genuinely useful to people you care about.
And then you get network effects. If you share your list with 5 friends who also do DIY, and they start adding stores they discover, the value grows non-linearly. You're not just capturing your own discoveries. You're capturing the distributed knowledge of a small, trusted group. But here's the critical point. Curation is everything. An unmoderated shared list becomes as noisy as Google Maps within about 3 months. Someone adds a store because the guy was nice, not because the store is actually good. Someone else adds a store they haven't visited in 4 years and it's declined. The sweet spot is a small group of contributors, 5 to 10 people max, with a single editor who prunes entries quarterly.
That editor role is the bottleneck and the secret sauce. Without it, the list degrades. With it, the list compounds. And quarterly pruning is not a huge burden. You're looking at maybe 30 stores, spending 2 minutes per store to think, have I been here recently? Is it still good? Does the entry need updating? An hour every 3 months.
Daniel's timing is actually perfect for this. He's moving apartments and doing DIY setup. Every trip to a new store is a data point. The setup period of a new home is a natural forcing function for discovery. You need picture hooks, you need shelf brackets, you need anchors for concrete walls, you need a plumbing fitting, you need electrical supplies. Each need sends you to a different kind of store, and each trip is an opportunity to add an entry. By the time the apartment is set up, you've bootstrapped a substantial list without any extra effort. You were going to those stores anyway.
That's the key insight. Don't make whitelist building a separate project. Make it a byproduct of the work you're already doing. You're already driving to the hardware store. You're already evaluating whether it's good. Adding an entry takes 30 seconds. The marginal cost is near zero.
And the meta lesson is that this generalizes. The same system works for plumbers, electricians, shawarma places, tailors, any category where the signal-to-noise ratio in existing platforms is terrible. You can build a personal consumer map of your city that grows with you. The hardware whitelist is the prototype. Once you've got the habit and the structure, you duplicate it for every category where you've had the "I wish I remembered that great place" experience.
So let me propose something concrete. Start today with a single Google Maps list. Call it something clear and specific. Tel Aviv DIY, the good ones, or Jerusalem Hardware, vetted. Add three stores you already know are good. Vaburg is your first entry. Fill out all four fields for each one in the notes. Share the link with one friend who shares your interest in DIY. Not a broadcast to 50 people. One person who will actually use it and might contribute. That's your minimum viable whitelist.
Then set a recurring calendar reminder for every 3 months. When it fires, spend an hour reviewing the list. Remove any store you haven't verified quality at in the last 6 months. A whitelist with 10 great stores is dramatically more useful than one with 50 stores where 30 are mediocre. The value is in the curation, not the volume.
After 3 months, evaluate. Is the Google Maps list working? Are you and your friend actually using it? Are you finding that you want more control over the format, or that you want to share it more broadly? If yes, consider migrating to something more durable like a GitHub Pages site. If no, you've lost nothing. The list took almost no time to maintain, and it's been useful in the meantime.
I want to contrast this with the American Yelp model because it helps clarify why the praise-only approach is actually more sustainable in the Israeli context. Yelp is built on reviewing everything, positive and negative. It assumes a legal environment where honest negative reviews are well protected and a cultural environment where people are comfortable sharing criticism publicly. Neither of those assumptions fully hold in Israel. The defamation law creates legal friction for negative reviews, and the cultural norm, Fergun, makes positive sharing feel more natural and socially rewarded, so you end up with a system that's misaligned on both axes. The praise-only whitelist aligns with both the legal reality and the cultural value.
And there's a knock-on effect here that I think is worth naming. When you maintain a whitelist, you're not just helping yourself and your friends. You're creating a market signal. The stores on your list get more business from informed customers who appreciate what they do. The stores not on your list, well, they don't get punished, but they don't get rewarded either. Over time, if enough people maintain and share whitelists, the good stores thrive and the mediocre ones face a quiet, non-litigious pressure to improve or lose relevance. It's market discipline through praise rather than punishment.
Which is a very Israeli solution, honestly. Don't fight the system. Root around it with social networks and shared values. The Fergun flywheel. As more people contribute to shared whitelists, the value grows, which attracts more contributors, which grows the value further. But only if the curation stays tight. That's the constraint. Without curation, the flywheel spins off its axle.
Okay. So we've painted the vision. Let me give you the exact steps to start this today. Because the worst time to start a whitelist is after you've forgotten the store.
Step 1. Open Google Maps right now. Create a new list. Name it clearly. Add Om Vaburg as your first entry and write the four fields in the notes, what they're best at, price level, staff member to ask for, date of visit. Step 2. Think of two more stores you already trust and add them the same way. Step 3, share the list link with exactly one friend. Step 4, set a quarterly calendar reminder to prune. That's it, you're done. The whole thing takes less than 10 minutes.
Step 5 is the habit. Every time you visit a new hardware store, and it's good, add it to the list before you leave the parking lot. The friction is so low that the only reason not to do it is forgetting. So build the trigger. Walking out of a good store equals adding to the list.
And I want to address the misconception that this is too much work for a casual DIYer. The marginal effort of adding a store is less time than it takes to complain about a bad experience. You're already forming the opinion, this place is great, they had the thing, the guy knew what he was talking about. Capturing that opinion in a structured note is not additional cognitive work. It's externalizing a judgment you've already made. The maintenance burden, if you batch it into quarterly reviews, is roughly an hour every 3 months. That's less time than most people spend scrolling Instagram in a single evening.
So you've got your list. But here's the question that keeps me up at night. What happens when a great store stops being great?
This is the unsolved problem of any praise-only system. A store you whitelisted 3 years ago changes ownership. The new owner doesn't have the same expertise, or raises prices, or stops stocking the specialty items that made the place special. Your whitelist still says it's great. Someone uses your list, goes to the store based on your recommendation, and has a mediocre experience. You've unintentionally misled them.
And you can't exactly add a note that says, "This place used to be good, but now it's not." That edges into the negative review territory you were trying to avoid. The defamation risk might be low for a factual statement about changed ownership, but the chilling effect is still there.
The best solution I can think of is the timestamp and the pruning cadence. If your entry says last visited March 2026 and it's now September 2027, the reader knows the information is stale. That's a signal without being a negative statement. And when you do your quarterly review, if you haven't visited a store in over a year, you either go verify it or you remove it. The absence of a store from your list isn't a negative review, it's just an absence. You're not saying it's bad, you're saying you can't vouch for it anymore.
That's the gentlest possible sunset mechanism. You're not warning people away, you're simply no longer recommending. The list is a living document of what you can personally vouch for right now, not a historical archive of every store that was ever good.
And that's actually more honest than most review platforms, where a 5-star rating from 2019 sits there forever with no indication that anything might have changed.
So let's zoom out to the bigger picture. If enough people build and share whitelists like this, what happens? Do we get a parallel reputation economy that bypasses traditional review platforms entirely?
I think we might. And not just for hardware. Imagine Fergun maps becoming a genre, curated praise lists for every category of Israeli consumer life. The plumber map, the shawarma map, the tailor map, the dentist map. Each one maintained by someone who actually knows the domain, shared among trusted networks, updated regularly. The platforms, Google Maps, Facebook, whatever, become the raw material, the infrastructure. But the curation layer is human, personal, and praise-driven.
It's a distributed, high-trust alternative to the low-trust, high-noise world of star ratings and anonymous reviews. And it's built on a cultural value Israelis already understand. You're not asking people to adopt a new behavior. You're giving them a system for something they already want to do.
The person who maintains one of these maps becomes a kind of civic resource. Not an influencer in the commercial sense. There's no sponsorship, no monetization, but a trusted node in a social network. People come to you because your judgment is known to be careful and your list is known to be current. That's a form of reputation that's more valuable than any number of Google reviews.
And it's inherently resistant to the problems that plague review platforms. Fake reviews don't work because the list is curated by a known person with a reputation to maintain. Review bombing doesn't work because there's no mechanism for mass negative input. The incentives are aligned. The curator's reputation depends on the quality of the list, so the curator is motivated to keep it accurate.
Daniel's question was about hardware stores, but I think he stumbled onto something bigger. The Israeli consumer landscape is full of these diamonds in the rough, exceptional small businesses that get lost in the noise of big chains, online platforms, and mediocre competitors. A systematic approach to finding and sharing them isn't just a shopping strategy. It's a way of reshaping the market to reward quality. And it's done entirely through the positive act of saying, "This one is good."
So here's what I'd say to Daniel, and to anyone listening who's had that Omvaborg moment. Start your list this week. Make it small, make it structured, make it current. Share it with one person. Prune it every quarter. And if you find something truly exceptional, send it to us. We might feature standout entries in a future episode.
The email is show@myweirdprompts.com. We'd love to see what you're discovering.
And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the early Renaissance, the platypus was unknown to European science. But its eventual discovery would reveal a creature that hunts by detecting the electrical fields generated by its prey's muscle movements, a sensory ability called electrolocation, and its scientific name, Ornithorhynchus anatinus, literally means bird snout duck-like, which is essentially a Renaissance naturalist throwing up his hands and naming it duck-faced bird nose.
Duck-faced bird nose.
Thanks, Hilbert. That's going to sit with me.
Here's the question I want to leave you with. If Fergun-based whitelists take off, if they become how Israelis navigate local commerce, what does that do to the businesses that don't make the list? Not the bad ones, but the ones that are just okay. The ones that are fine, but not exceptional. In a world where consumers route around mediocrity by sharing curated praise, does fine become the new bad? Or does the rising tide of Fergun lift all boats by making quality more visible and more rewarded? I don't know the answer, but I think we're going to find out.
This has been my Weird Prompts, thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, tell someone about it. That's Fergan for podcasts. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My Weird Prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My Weird Prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.